Good afternoon and welcome to Living Permaculture on KDNK. I'm Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, joined by my co-host, Jerome Osentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute, or CRIMPI for short, in Basalt, Colorado. Our guest today is Harry Holding, a multi-award-winning landscape designer. Harry owns and operates Harry Holding Studio, an international landscape and garden design studio, and LDN Horticulture, an industry-leading aftercare and garden maintenance service provider. These two companies, based in London and Bristol, UK, have sustainability and resilience at the core of everything they do, sourcing locally, planting to create rich, biodiverse ecosystems, and employing organic gardening principles. Their gardens are designed to last and enhance the lives of their clients and the natural world. Harry grew up in a family of horticulturalists and had his hands in the soil from a young age, developing a deep love and connection with the natural world. After working in Australia and across the UK for other designers, landscape firms, and nurseries, in 2016, Harry set up his own businesses, which I just mentioned. In 2018, he was awarded a scholarship to study at the prestigious London College of Garden Design at Kew Gardens, graduating with a distinction and the College Award for Top Student of the Year. In 2023, at the Chelsea Flower Show, Harry presented the School Food Matters Garden, which won the Royal Horticultural Society People's Choice Award and a Silver Gilt in the All About Plants category. In 2024, at the Chelsea Flower Show, the Royal Horticultural Society invited Harry to design and present the No Adults Allowed Garden, which he co-designed with 9 and 10-year-old pupils from Sullivan Primary School in Fulham, southwest London. Harry is a pre-registered member of the Society of Garden Designers, a regular tutor at the London College of Garden Design Kew Gardens, and a guest speaker on planting design. Most recently, Harry Holding Studio was named among House and Garden's top 50 garden designers for 2025. So we are so thrilled and honored to have Harry Holding joining us on the program today. Harry, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here too.
Will you share with our listeners the story of how we connected and how it came to be that you're here in Carbondale, Colorado today?
Absolutely. So I'm on this sort of exciting journey writing a book called Eat Your Garden, which is going to be out in May 2026 with Chelsea Green. And through that search, I came across Jerome and Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute. And of course, then on to connecting with you, Vanessa, and all the incredible work you're doing. And Eat Your Garden is really about the ideas of bringing food and beauty together. And I think that inherently comes with growing and creating something with passion and love. But particularly as well, using this group of plants coined edimentals, so edible ornamental plants. And how we can bring that aspect of a foraging experience into people's lives through ornamental gardens, and that you don't need acres and acres of land to do this. So the book also learns from big ideas in more regenerative movements, such as the like as permaculture and incredible work that people like Jerome have been doing for decades, and other movements like edible meadows or agroforestry, and really looking at these and how we can distill those ideas into smaller garden formats. So anyone with a balcony or a garden or even small holding scale can take these ideas and actually apply them at home.
And in your book you're going to be doing case studies of different projects and gardens, and so CRIMPI is going to be a case study in the book. Yeah, we're a case study in about 5 books, I believe, and that's great because we were able to invite you here to the. We had our academy, we've shrunk it down into 2 days, and we were able to invite you here to take the academy, which was Friday and Saturday of last week, and that was great to have you here and being involved in that. And you've got an overview of what's happening at CRIMPI and kind of at a very good time when there's fruits coming on, and we had a great group of people.
Yeah, incredible couple of days, and yeah, I think it's been a real joy to immerse myself in the sort of world of CRIMPI and everything that's happening here in Colorado. So yeah, really, really great experience. And we've got case studies from across North America and in the UK and also in Norway. So Stephen Barstow in Norway is the person who coined the term edimentals, and he's grown over 4,000 edible plants in his garden as well. So quite an international book.
Yeah, Vanessa's been showing around to some other farms and projects here in the valley, which is great. Rounds it off, and yeah, we're just excited about having you there. And I'm planning a trip to Europe this fall, and so maybe I'll go back to England again and
come and visit.
Yeah, you know, check out a few places. We're going to go to Portugal and maybe Madeira and so, and Greece and on to other places this winter. Yeah.
And Harry, as you've been researching for your book, has your perspective on what you're planning to include in your book changed at all based on what you've been seeing and researching at other places?
I think it's always been this evolving process. And the book idea really got sparked when I did that School Food Matters garden in 2023. And the garden was over 80% edible. And this sort of small, you know, 8 by 10 meter, which is converting to feet, I couldn't do on the spot, but it's a small space. And I think people were really struck by the idea that, you know, you can have all this beauty and it can be edible too. So from that point, you know, it really has evolved into to take on so many different meanings. And I think for me, it's so important to tell the story of ideas like permaculture in a book such as this, because, you know, inherently in permaculture, we're looking to create multi-layered systems, using perennials, stacking functions, and I think with that also pouring a lot of love and care into it and inherently creating beautiful landscapes.
And your design firm focuses on landscapes that nourish your clients as well as the natural world. How did you come upon that philosophy?
Yeah, I think for me, I've always been driven by the environmental side of life and work and sort of ideas and passions. And, you know, naturally a career in landscape design sort of tends to that. But I think ultimately, you know, so much of society is built around this idea of humans being separate from nature. But, you know, very much we are a part of nature, not apart from it. And I think it's incredibly important to weave humans into that. And that's, I think, something that permaculture does so well. So yeah, for me, if you have the buy-in of humans, people, clients, if it's in the public realm, just users of that space, then somewhere will be successful. If people don't buy into it, often it won't succeed. So I think you have to deliver not just for wildlife, but for people too, and vice versa. I think if you just focus on people and neglect mm-hmm. other living beings, then it's not really going to be a successful garden in many other metrics. So for us, it's always been at the core of what we do.
And is there a lot of competition of people having a similar approach to their work, or is it unique in your area to focus on food and the nourishment of the human soul?
Mm. I mean, I think, you know, in the 10 years I've been practicing, I think the idea of, you know, sustainability now is not something that differentiates you so much in garden landscape design. I think it's more becoming much more inherent. Certainly at different levels in the industry. And so, yeah, I think thankfully it's becoming much more the norm. But I think the food angle and passion that I and my studio bring to our work through integrating food into gardens and landscapes, I think, isn't something that everyone does. And I think that, you know, trying to bring that through to more people by showing that you don't need to sacrifice on beauty and space, and have found that, you know, a lot of our clients, particularly in the UK where we don't have as much space as you might have over here, you know, they don't necessarily want to, in their eyes, sacrifice on that ornamental side of things by bringing in, you know, vegetable growing, for example. So in the small space, you can show that actually it's possible, weave together beauty and edibles and create something much more natural and like a foraging experience. And people mm-hmm. seem to really respond to that.
And I think, yeah, you have those two elements. Let's put another leg on the stool, the well-gardened mind.
Mm. There you go. Mm.
So that's the part we haven't mentioned. Ms. Smith has written a great book on the well-gardened mind. She's from England, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I've been buying that book and giving it away, and that's why we garden, because, I mean, you know, people have this misconception about gardening that it's work and it's, oh, it's all downhill, it's weedy, and, you know, they have their garden and it turns to weeds and they don't know what to do and all. And it's like, if you have a perennial food forest, that's not the case. You know, it's the Garden of Eden.
It's a joy.
And you just, it just keeps going and keeps growing and flourishing, and you get to be a part of that creation.
Mm. And the wildlife and the birds and the pollinators are your soap opera?
Definitely. Everything comes in there. That's a big, it's an orchestra. It's a symphony. You know, everything is, and now we have the dogs that scare the bears away. So it's like it just creating this Garden of Eden, which is the food forest and the integrated systems. And the greenhouse, the jasmine is just coming on now, right? And I sleep in my greenhouse, so I get the jasmine as I, I walk through to go to my little bunk. And, you know, there's all kinds of fruit in there right now, grapes and raspberries and stuff like that.
Well, it's also that shift of mindset from moving away from complete control and mastery to being a part of something bigger. And, yes, we are ecosystem engineers in these systems, but you know, mastering control is certainly not possible or desirable. Mm-hmm. You know, nature has its own way.
And Ms. Smith wrote this book about the Wild Garden Mind because her grandfather was shell-shocked in World War I. And we, you know, we continue warring every place in the world, and we continue to destroy people's, you know, brains and limbs and stuff like that. And we struggle to figure out what, you know, how to bring them back into, you know, normalcy. But, you know, and they never really considered, you know, horticultural therapy for veterans. That's a completely open book there. We could start doing that, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a nursery in California I follow, and luckily I was able to support them with a plant purchase recently. They're called Planting Justice, and they employ people coming out of the criminal justice system.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we could just stop warring and stop bombing people, and then we wouldn't have to worry so much about trying to fix them all, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That would be the answer.
Well, in our region, mine and Jerome's students and clients and customers, you know, have bought into the edimentals and the soil building and the forest gardening. But largely in our area, I'd say we have a lot of development of that idea and aesthetic and those values to foster.
Absolutely. But I think, you know, very much the same in the UK as well. And ultimately, these ideas start small and grow from there. And I think that it doesn't need everybody in the world to grow food. That would be lovely, of course. But actually, just small steps taken by a great number of people can really have a big impact, particularly on neighborhoods and communities.
And would it be spoiling the book if you shared some of your stops on your journey with us?
No, not at all. I mean, my America trip so far has been starting in Vermont, where I was over with Ben Falk, over to here, Colorado, as we discussed, seeing you wonderful two people, and then going back via New York to Foodway, which is an incredible project, community-led edible public park in New York, in the Bronx, and I'm really excited to see what they're up to there. And I think that takes us really, in the conclusion of the book, to this is bigger than our gardens. It's, you know, beyond that garden gate, how do we take these ideas into the built public realm and the sort of built environment around us? So community gardens, public plantings. Like, imagine if we were waiting to get a bus stop and it was just covered all around you, just banked in different herbs and flowering plants. You know, the scent, the sensory experience, the ability to just harvest some rosemary on your way home to cook with. I mean, that can have some real impact for people who don't necessarily even have gardens. And particularly in the UK, a lot of people don't have gardens. So that's sort of been, yeah, America tour. And as I mentioned, Stephen Barstow in Norway. And then across the UK, we've got a whole array of incredible farmers and growers, and hearing from Tim Smith, who's a founder of the Eden Project, and the idea of the importance of nature connection and really what a big idea can do, as we've seen as Eden has evolved and grown over the years. Other people like Josh Sparks at Birch Farm, which is practicing, you know, similar ideas to what Jerome's been talking about with syntropic agroforestry, and, you know, that sort of idea of chop and drop and growing your own biomass. And I think something that hasn't really picked up in the UK, and possibly not so much in the US either, with her, you know, Jerome being a real pioneer in that regard. So it's great to kind of hear from both sides of the ponds as well, and different climates and how we all face different challenges and opportunities.
And you got a chance to do some chop and drop in the greenhouse.
Lots of chop and drop in the greenhouse. Yeah.
Probably the only place in the world where you can chop and drop Lucayena.
Yeah.
And feed it to the goats and rabbits and put it on the ground and harvest the seed and do Mexican sunflower and what else do we? Oh, yeah, the glacine and
toilet. Foraging some tropical raspberries in the process.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that was fun to do. And I was. Every 3 months or so, I have have a class, and I come in and let them chop and drop and open up the canopy. So
you mean agricultural workers?
Exactly, and you came and did the class on compost tea and.
Well, speaking of inoculating soils and inoculating children, I mentioned the project you did that the Royal Horticultural Society.
RHS for short.
had you present at the flower show where you co-designed a garden with students. Can you tell us about how it was working with children and how they helped to create the elements of the garden and maybe describe the garden to us? Because it was very magical.
Well, there's a saying in Hollywood, something like, don't work with animals and children or something like that, isn't there? So, no, it wasn't that bad. No, they were fantastic. It was quite a fun opportunity, really. The RHS invited us and said that we're quite open-ended, but this garden is going to be co-designed with a group of school children. So the first set out to find those children, and around the Chelsea Flower Show is quite affluent neighbourhoods, but just pockets of really sort of deprived areas with people who don't have gardens. And we found this really special school in Fulham, just only a few miles down the road. And I think it was about 40-50% of the children have free school meals, which is a sort of welfare element in the UK. And it just felt like a really deserving school of people who needed it. And the incredible thing about that school, which for me is just testament to school gardens, is about 30 to 40 years ago, they turned a bare patch of lawn into both a wild garden with vegetable gardens and ponds and planted loads of trees, and it's now producing fruit and food year-round, and all the children do outdoor learning once a week as a minimum, and most of those children live in high-rise flats next door with barely even a balcony. So the power of what that has done is really quite something. So these children weren't your typical inner-city London kids. They kind of really were engaged in the process and had some incredible ideas. So did about 10 workshops with them over the process of about a year, and went from just getting some thoughts down on paper all the way through sourcing plants, growing them, to creating this garden at Chelsea, which was this kind of magical wonderland where you went through crazy sort of varieties of different levels, and you culminated in this experience coming to basically a den which was set with a subterranean element where you slid down a slide through a water pool, not getting wet, into the subterranean den where we had sort of caves with lots of fossils and just kind of really beautiful set dressing to kind of enhance that magical experience. So that's quite a fun thing about creating a show garden, is you get to run a little bit wild with it. And we then went on and rebuilt the garden at their school afterwards, and it's now enjoyed by community groups and families in the area, and hundreds of people use it every week.
Yeah, CRMS has probably the best school garden valley or in the valley here. They've been growing food for that, for the school. And did you get a chance to see Stephanie Sison's community food forest there?
Yeah, the Basalt Food Park we saw yesterday evening.
Yeah, well, that's doing well. We ate a lot of Nanking cherries this year, and there's apples and pears on there, and the town is keeping that up pretty well.
Yeah,
and that was one of our crimpy creations. She designed that and got that going when she was managing crimpy.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to see, and it's these public initiatives that can really have such a powerful impact beyond the individual home. So, and beautiful to see how it's been taken over by the county.
And she has a beautiful centropic garden in Puerto Rico now. So she's been working on that for a couple of years, and really productive. Yeah.
And then the other public garden we saw today, just before this, was the True Nature Healing Arts Peace Garden.
Beautiful space, very serene.
And then yesterday we toured a past guest of ours on this show, Rob and Ginger Jansen of Basalt Mountain Gardens, and we saw their homestead. So that was also very inspiring for Harry.
No, it's a beautiful place, and it seems like a lot of initiatives happening all around here.
Speaking of which, will you tell us about your future homestead?
So I have a property in Wales, about 8.5 acres on the border of England and Wales. And beginning on the sort of process of starting to create an edible landscape there. So fortunately for me, through this experience of writing Eat Your Garden, I've been very lucky to meet people like yourselves and see what's been happening with Jerome at Crimpy and other homesteaders like Ben in Vermont. So lots of food for thought to be bringing back to my landscape. We've got a little bit more water than you guys have, about 40 or so inches a year. And that comes with some benefits, but also other challenges. So sometimes you dig a hole and it just fills up with water, and not necessarily the best for planting fruit trees into. So yeah, it's exciting. We'll be kind of really moving on to site next year.
Yeah, and you got some good ideas about a possible micro hydroelectric system.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one of those things of when you get quoted a lot to connect to the grid, it throws up some questions about do we need to be in. We've got a creek running down the side of us, so possible micro hydro, and we don't have 300 days of sun like you guys, probably 60 days of sun.
Wow.
That's maybe an exaggeration, but so solar might not be as effective. But yeah, lots of ideas, and bringing centropic agroforestry and certainly some annual veg garden growing as well.
Well, we're getting close to closing time, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to offer any reflections or observations or anything that our listeners might appreciate about your visit or about your book or about your perspectives or about your background.
I mean, I think the thing really that I'm trying to do with the book is just inspire people and give them the tools to give it a go. You don't need acres of land. You really don't. And a lot of the ideas that we're looking at in the book might stem from large spaces, but actually all you need is at most even just a pot, or not even that, just find a community initiative nearby. And I think the tools as well in the book is a look at my ecological planting design process. So really just a lot of those permaculture design principles, of course, perennials first, but thinking in layers. So going through an actionable step-by-step guide on how you go from an idea and an inspiration through to actually having plant lists well-designed, mimicking certain layers that you'll find in natural plant communities, and then the tools to be able to go on, source them, plant them, and care for them. So I think for me, it's trying to give inspiration with actionable advice, and ultimately it boils down to just give it a go, because even the most professional gardeners, like Jerome, who we have here, there's mistakes along the way, and that's how you learn. So don't be afraid and get planting.
Yeah, I found some videos you had posted online. One was where you were featuring your small garden outside of, I don't know if you still have that property. It was like
that was when I was renting a property in London, and I think it was about 3 by 3 meters. So that's probably 9 or 10 foot by 10 foot. So tiny little space renting. And even there, you know, my strategy was pots. And I could take those pots with me, and I still have them where I live now in Bristol many years on. So nothing should stop you, even if you don't own your home. Just get growing.
Yeah, you can do a lot in hanging baskets, and we're starting a microgreens business. So just growing sprouts in trays. And we just did our arugula culture bed and planted it while we were doing that forest garden workshop. And now it's all planted with perennial vegetables.
Yeah.
So Eric Tonesmeyer wrote a book on perennial vegetables. The nursery in Eltabel.
Eaglecrest?
Gave us a whole bunch of their plants they were throwing away. And they were perfect. They gave us horseradish and rhubarb. And so we went right in the arugula culture bed. A lot of them are insectivory plants, alyssum, herbs. So we put grapes along the fence there. And then just cleaning up the old wood pile that was ugly, and turned that into a beautiful edible landscape.
And right? what I love about that project we've been looking at the last few days is, you know, that could be an ornamental border in anyone's garden.
Exactly.
Just a rectangle, you know, however many feet by however many feet long, and the opportunity really just to shift that and evolve it. And even if you have something that's planted with purely ornamental plants, just create some space, lift, divide, move things about, start layering in some perennial veg and edimentals, and you know, you won't regret it.
Horseradish is actually ornamental. It's a beautiful leaves. It has a beautiful flower, and you can grind up the root and make a sauce and digest your steak. You know,
exactly.
There it is, right there. Everything, you know, got everything right there. And the rhubarb looks great too. It's an ornamental, and you can eat rhubarb. Rhubarb pie, right?
Exactly. Well, what we do, rhubarb in the UK is make rhubarb gin. We love our gin, so chop it up and let it sit there for a while. And delicious.
Yeah. In gin.
In gin.
Oh.
Yeah. Of course, we love our gin in the UK. So,
Kerrison Keeler used to have a special show just on rhubarb. I think it was all fictitious, but anyway. So making a few announcements. We have probably another workshop in September. It's on our website, crmpi.org. And we have regular tours. And I'm writing my next book, A Perennial Economy. That's moving along with Jackie. And we're going to be getting through the major harvest season now with lots of pears and apples and plums and grapes, full on.
Crimpy is laden with fruit at the moment. Absolutely laden.
And we have this huge squash area that I grew, Casey's Desert Spirit. We probably have 150 of squash climbing up on the goat pen and all of those fence lines and trees. And let your squash run wild.
Too right. Can't have too many squash.
Well, if any of our listeners are interested in connecting with Harry Holding, they can find his contact information at www.harryholding.co.uk. And I suppose you might also have some social media handles.
At Harry Holding Studio, and we're on Instagram.
Harry's upcoming book is entitled Eat Your Garden, Edimentals as a Beautiful, Low-Effort Way to Grow Food. It's expected to be released by Chelsea Green Publishing in May of 2026, so look out for it in your local bookstores or online. Harry Holding, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule designing and writing to join us today.
Thank you, and it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you also to our listeners for joining us today. I'm your host, Vanessa Harmony of Colorado Edible Forest in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, with my co-host, Jerome Ostentowski of Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute in Basalt, Colorado. Tune in next month on KDNK on the third Monday of the month at 4 p.m. for another episode of Living Permaculture. Talk to you then.